all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, March 2nd. Nice to have you along. Kristen Lyerly and Aaron Zommers will be joining me in just a sec. Coming up this hour, Kristen joins us for Hometown Health and the subject of the period tax. And we'll also talk about the pink tax as well, the tendency for products marketed toward women to cost more than virtually the same products targeted to men. We will get an update from Weatherology on the forecast for the weekend. Our Civic Media homeroom includes one Luke Mathers. And I think we'll talk about the Cripes cast with Charlie Behrens as it comes up later on this weekend. If you'd like to join us for anything that's on your mind, 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. You can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. And of course, upnorthnewswi.com is where you find the work that our team does. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, as you might have just heard the announcer man say. We're here as part of a separate joint sales agreement. We're like independent contractors of news and features hanging out here on the Civic Media Radio Network, and we appreciate that very much. And you can find us on social media by searching for Up North News WI. So in bringing in Dr. Lyerly and one Aaron Zommers, we've been reveling in the fact that the sun seems to have come up exponentially earlier than it has over the past couple of days. And look how chipper we are. Yes, that's Kristen's. It's her default, but look how chipper, you know, we are this morning.
Woo!
Yeah, something. Okay, let's not overdo it here. Let's see. It's did we the Girl Scout cookie thing with you already, Kristen? Didn't we? Your favorite type?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and I was gonna think about it, like if you could make your own Girl Scout cookie, and I thought about it a little, and then I thought, no, I'm gonna leave it up to the Girl Scouts because they're doing a really good job.
So you're saying a grilled cheese wouldn't wear a grilled cheese cookie? For example, no. Aaron, you come up with any new ones?
You know, I was trying to think of bad ones, and that's just easy, like sardines.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Hey, wait a minute. Again, Wisconsin Fish Fry Friday flavored Girl Scout cookies. So it's like battered cod, something like that.
See, I think those would smell terrible, and. That would be a huge turnoff for most people.
Well, maybe with a little lemon. Maybe the lemon from one of those other cookies.
Yeah, you know? It could be all right.
Wait. Kristen's got it.
Kitty cocktail cookies.
Kitty cocktail cookies. Little hint of cherry in there.
Old-fashioned.
My mind went to old-fashioned, and then I went to Girl Scouts, and I was like, no. Let's take it down a notch.
Look at you making cookies family-friendly again. Thinking of those Girl Scouts. Good on you. I want to take a minute here just to, if you missed it in our last hour, Joe Zepecki joined us to talk about comments made by Supreme Court candidate Janet Protasiewicz, the Milwaukee County judge, in noting that she would recuse herself if she was on the Supreme Court from cases involving the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, given that the Democratic Party has endorsed her and is putting substantial sums of money into the race, not to her directly. They can't do that, but they can do a lot of messaging and a lot of other things in support of her candidacy. And that only seems right or balanced, if you will, because Dan Kelly has actually been paid six figures by the Wisconsin Republican Party and the Republican National Committee to offer legal advice on things that included the fake electors scheme. And in our last hour, Joe Zepecki reminded us that not only did Dan Kelly refuse yesterday to say that he would recuse himself if the Republican Party had cases before the Supreme Court, but that Dan Kelly already has a history of problems with recusal. And in fact, I had to look back to the Up North newsletter that I wrote on April 30th of 2020 with the headline, Lame Duck Justice Unrecuses Himself. He recused himself and then he unrecused himself. Exactly. Mm-hmm. He was defeated by Jill Karofsky, you'll recall, back in April of 2020. And at the time, he had recused himself from a case brought by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, that was seeking at the time to have more than 200,000 voter registrations struck from the rolls based on data that was dubious at best. And yet they wanted this tremendous voter purge. Well, Dan Kelly, being on the ballot, recused himself from the case. But then after he lost the election, but before he was replaced on the court, he unrecused himself in order to, again, side with the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Well, thankfully, in time, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled like a year later, that's how long this case went through the system, that the State Elections Commission should not remove those voters from the rolls, in large part because it is not the Wisconsin Election Commission's job to purge the voter rolls. That has to be done at the local level. So the case was dismissed, but only after some 2 years of legal uncertainty, starting with an Ozaukee County judge who sided with Will back in December of 2019. And so all this time, you had Dan Kelly saying, well, I won't be part of it until it was convenient for him. And I sense that if he gets back on the court, Kristen, this won't be the last time something like that happens.
No, the hypocrisy. Don't talk about me. Let's point fingers at my opponent because it's all I've got. This is so painful.
And so that opponent, Janet Protasiewicz, to her credit, said quite clearly, if the Wisconsin Democratic Party has a case that comes up, she will recuse herself. Whether the conservative justices will, I wouldn't hold my breath based on their past history. We'll get a weather update and talk to Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters up next. You're up north.
Don't go near the water. Don't you think it's sad? What's happened to the water? Our water's going bad.
I have to admit that until last night, I did not know that the Beach Boys did a song called Don't Go Near the Water, talking about water pollution at the time, Kristen.
That was the Beach Boys?
Yeah. Yeah, it was that's a new one on me, but there's one that we wanted to share, and we will get set to welcome Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters in just a sec here. First off, we're going to get an update on the weather forecast. For that, it's going to be Michael Cairo, meteorologist over at Weatherology. Michael, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Tell us about weather as we wrap up the week here and head into the weekend. We've had such a mixed bag lately, and I think folks who want to make some plans would like to see what kind of outlook they're going to be facing around Wisconsin for the next few days.
Yeah, for the most part, looking pretty tranquil, pretty much statewide out there for today. Still expecting that threat for some snow across the far southeastern portions of the state coming up tomorrow and into your Friday evening time frame. But Saturday, we're back to a fairly quiet stretch of weather for much of the state. And then another opportunity for a mixed bag of precipitation returning on Sunday. But yeah, across the state for today, seeing a decent amount of sunshine already. Areas like Wausau on into northwestern portions of Wisconsin. I think the clouds will hang thickest across the southern half of the state for today. Areas like Madison, Milwaukee, Waukesha, I think generally cloudy conditions for today. And those temperatures fairly close to average for early March, expecting high temperatures across the northern half of the state for today in the lower range of the 30s, more like the upper 30s from La Crosse down to near Madison and Milwaukee for today. And thankfully not overly breezy either. Those winds will stay fairly light and variable across most of the state for today. And then for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, still looking to stay dry statewide. Overnight low temperatures looking to drop back into the middle range of the teens for northern Wisconsin, areas like Wausau, right around 16 for that overnight low temperature. But we'll stick closer to the lower to middle 20s across the southern half of the state. Still expecting that area of low pressure to work into the Ohio River Valley region into the day on Friday coming up. The track of that system has trended a bit further off to the southeast compared to when we had chatted at this time yesterday. So areas like Madison, Waukesha could maybe pick up a couple of inches of snowfall. I think we'll stay less than an inch of any snow accumulation in areas like Madison. And now it looks like the Fox River Valley region looking to stay completely dry throughout the course of your Friday, and the northern portions of the state looking quiet as well. Friday's high temperature is just a couple of degrees milder, closer to the middle to upper 30s for Wausau over to near Chippewa Falls. Further off to the south, looking at mid-30s for high temperatures for much of southern parts of the state. And then that system exits on off to the east for Saturday. Very slight chance for some flurries with a weak upper-level disturbance, mainly from central into southern Wisconsin, but not expecting any snow accumulations there. Middle to upper 30s, even for areas like Wausau on Saturday, and approaching some low to mid-40s down into the southern parts of the state. Another low-pressure system then does bring a chance for a late-day rain-snow mixture, mainly across western Wisconsin into the day on Sunday. Possibly some snow accumulations into Sunday night, but not too bad temperature-wise even there for your Sunday. Well into the 40s for southern Wisconsin, and even some upper 30s near that 40-degree mark as far north as Wausau.
We've already been commenting this morning how glorious it has felt today, noticing how much earlier the sun is coming up just in this week alone. Now you throw in upper 30s to low 40s for parts of the forecast, and I don't think you could have done more, Michael, to brighten the mood around here today.
Yeah, we're starting to get, more to a spring-like feel out there. But again, there's still a couple of shots at some of that wintry-type precipitation the next few days. We'll keep us reminded that it's still March in Wisconsin here.
That's right. Take that advice to heart. Yeah. Michael Cairo from Weatherology, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, let's bring in Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Kristen Lyerly joining us as well, since apparently she claims that they know each other, or it's just a ploy to continue hanging out here on the radios. Seth, good morning. Can you vouch for Dr. Lyerly?
Yeah, the fact check comes through as a positive. Yep.
Excellent. All right.
That's an accurate statement.
Kristen, you've not been voted off the island. Thanks. Please hang around and
sweet.
Yeah. like we're doing you the big favor here, not you to us. Seth is joining us because something caught my eye in a press release from Wisconsin Conservation Voters, noting that not only are they making endorsements for the April 4th nonpartisan elections, but that this is also going to be their largest ever spring election program. Now, again, as a former legislator, I'm very familiar with Wisconsin Conservation Voters. Legislators, many of them, covet having an endorsement and learning more from them. But to hear the activity for the nonpartisan April elections, I thought it'd be a good opportunity for Seth to talk about the organization's goals, what they stand for. And that includes, people that are running in nonpartisan races. So, Seth, tell the audience a bit more about the group and what's leading you to have such a large spring program.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's great to be on the show. I'm really excited to be able to talk about this a little bit more here. Elections are a great way to build power for our goals. Our mission as Wisconsin Conservation Voters is to engage voters to protect Wisconsin's environment. We know that there are so many folks in city halls, village halls, school boards, state legislatures, and in the U.S. Capitol that are have tremendous power to make responsible decisions that will protect our natural resources and our people for generations to come. One of the most effective ways that we can build power and make sure that we have good decision makers are through elections. So we go really big in elections. It's one of the most effective things we can do to protect our environment, especially in this political climate.
Oh, without a doubt, in this political climate, can you? We've been trying to tell folks about the direct impact of these kinds of elections, and so I want to give you the opportunity to talk about how you see the direct impact of a state Supreme Court seat, and not just from the regular conservation voter standpoint, but there was even an event, if I'm not mistaken, last night involving Wisconsin's Native American communities and talking about the impact the state Supreme Court can have there as well.
Yeah. So our sister organization, Wisconsin Native Vote, hosted a dinner with Ho-Chunk leaders and other folks in the Milwaukee area to talk about the importance. I mean, the importance of this election, the state Supreme Court, is going to reach so many people and just have so many different impacts across the state. We've been saying it for a while in Wisconsin, but now the national media folks and Politico folks are all saying that the state Supreme Court race in Wisconsin is the most important election in the country in 2023. What we decide on April 4th will have impacts for a whole host of issues. When we think about the environment, we have a very clear threat in Dan Kelly. When he ran in 2020 and lost by a landslide, he already had a really bad conservation record to point to. He had taken money from families that were profiting off of Enbridge, the company that builds oil pipelines, and is just constantly surrounded by controversies for the impact that they have on native land up north and all sorts of other places. He continues to bring in corporate donations from folks that are going to directly profit off of the destruction of our environment, the poisoning of our drinking water. We don't only assume that he's going to do that, but he already has a track record. When we go beyond the environment and conservation issues, I think, and when it comes to elections, especially, the most important thing on the line is gerrymandering and the right for voters to choose their elected officials. For the last decade plus, we've had a set of maps where Republicans in the Capitol drew maps to make sure that they could tilt the scales in their favor. This current Supreme Court ruled that they were okay, and we ended up with a much worse set of maps. And we need somebody who's not going to allow that to happen. If we want to protect our drinking water, if we want to address climate change and correct environmental injustice, the first thing we need to do is to be able to have fair elections. So there's just so much on the line with this election at the top of the ticket that we are having, like you said, our biggest election program in April in our organization's history. Just last week, we made our first knock in Madison to talk to 57,000 voters. Just on Tuesday in Brown Deer, we made our first knock where we'll talk to just shy of 30,000 voters. That one's also really excited. We opened a canvas office in Senate District 8. There's a special election for state Senate. Jody Habish-Sinikin is running in an open seat. If we win this one, even though it's a traditionally Republican-held seat, if we win this one, we can prevent a supermajority in the state Senate for Republican control. And I don't think we could find a better conservation candidate than someone like Jody Habish-Sinikin. She's spent her career protecting drinking water. She was instrumental in the Great Lakes Compact. She's an environmental lawyer. There are just so many great races happening up and down the ticket. And I could go on about our nearly two dozen local endorsements as well.
Seth, you do such important work. And you mentioned earlier that you're out knocking on doors. I know I text banked with Casey Hicks up in Green Bay last week, and it was so much fun. There were names on there that I recognized. I was texting back and forth with my friends, actually, while we were text banking. It was great. And a lot of us are really feeling this pressure, recognizing how important this is for everyone in Wisconsin. So if I'm out there and I'm listening and I want to get involved because I care, how can I get involved with Wisconsin Conservation Voters and the great work that you're doing?
I am so glad you asked. The people power and the group of incredible volunteers and members and folks and partner organizations are really what's going to get us across the finish line here on April 4th and position us to be able to do a lot of the things we're talking about in election season. So if you go to our website, conservationvoters.org, you can sign up for our emails, you can give us a donation, you can find my email address, shoot me an email. I'll sit down, I'll have coffee with you if you're in the area like Kristen, or if you're somewhere else around the state. We have community organizers and other staff and everywhere from Beloit to Bayfield, really. So we would love to sit down and talk more, or in this age, we can hop on the Zoom. And we're going to have a ton of volunteer opportunities in the next few weeks to get out the vote, to talk to our friends and family about the election, to talk to voters, and to, you know, do everything from writing postcards to texting. The more people that make a couple phone calls or talk to their friends, the more we can ensure that Dan Kelly loses by another landslide, an even bigger landslide on April 4th.
Let's go to that local end of things, because again, if you look at some of the endorsements, they include city council races in Appleton, De Pere, Sheboygan, Mount Pleasant, Marinette, town of Peshtigo. There's also mayor's races in Madison, Racine, and Green Bay. Can you talk about quickly the impact that these very local elections can have on natural resources in Wisconsin and why people should know who they're voting for at the local level?
Absolutely. So much. I mean, all of these places where we made local endorsements have been embodying the potential for local government to act on things like climate change and cleaning up our drinking water. The three mayors in Racine, Green Bay, and Madison that we endorsed are leaders, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally in addressing climate change.
They really are.
In clean energy.
And they certainly have proven to be worthy of that endorsement. And again, we appreciate you letting us know that people can go to conservationvoters.org to learn much more about it. Seth Hoffmeister, thank you so much for the visit and the update. We appreciate it greatly.
Thank you. You both have a great day. Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. And Kristen's back with our hometown health segment next. You're Up North.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
I want to talk to the ladies tonight. About a situation I'm pretty sure y'all would be able to relate to. Trust me. What's that? Today I'm not feeling pretty.
So I was talking to Dr. Lyerly last night about this segment about the period tax, and we're always looking for, you know, bumper music that kind of sets the stage. And I was a little surprised at the amount of music that has been written about subjects of which I know absolutely nothing. And so I ran some of them by Kristen, and we decided to go with Mary J. Blige, who has a song called PMS. There was Dolly Parton with the PMS Blues, neither of which are directly related to what we're talking about, but tangentially enough that we're on there. So Kristen, thanks for not just being an educated OBGYN, but my music consultant for a segment like Hometown Health this week.
And thank you for weeding through all of the information that's out there and all of the music, because much of it is not radio friendly.
Would not play it in a million years. No, you would play it amongst friends and you'd laugh. You would not play it on the radio.
Kind of like talking about women's health issues, Pat.
Yes. And mm-hmm. again, I have to be mindful sometimes that being married to an OBGYN myself, sometimes I'm overly comfortable bringing up a subject and then I'll get the looks from people and they'll be like, oh, wait, I'm too inside baseball on this. But these are important topics. And I'm going to start first by offering a partial apology before we even introduce our guest, Suzanne Herman from Period Law. Kristen had made clear that this segment was going to be about the period tax. The first thing as I started looking up for it, I realized there's also something called the pink tax, which is basically the same product marketed toward women, has a tendency to cost more, usually if something is colored pink, like a razor or something like that. That's not specifically what you want to get into, but again, there's a bit of a relationship there in that, as I've said to my wife and daughters a million times, it's really hard being a girl. Mm-hmm. You're good on you. I wouldn't trade with you for a minute. So having offered all of that up, why don't you introduce our topic and our guest this week?
Well, as Pat said, we are going to be talking about the period tax, and I'm so excited to introduce our guest, Suzanne Herman, who is the legal director for Period Law. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You bet.
And thank you for that differentiation between the pink tax and the period tax. That's super appreciated as well.
Yeah, and it all kind of comes down to one thing, which is really discrimination against women. I mean, let's be honest. And it's so subtle that we often don't think about it. So let's just launch right into it. What is period law?
Yeah, absolutely. So we like to call ourselves the lawyers for the menstrual movement, which is a wonderful sentence, but like, what does that really mean? We're our goal is to fight for tax-free, toxin-free menstrual products that are freely available to anyone who needs them. So we work with volunteer attorneys from around the country to advance state and federal period policy. We provide legal research and support to people in states across the country. We work with a national advocacy organization that's called period.org, all caps, period.org. I encourage you to look them up. Right now, we actually have a partnership, which we're really excited about, with CVS Health. And in the past, throughout our work, we've sued states where we needed to. We've launched class action lawsuits that attempt to end the tampon tax, another of these like euphemistic terms about taxes that fall on women, which I can talk about more, but to end the tampon tax in New York, and we sued in Michigan, and both of those lawsuits resulted in legislative appeal of the tax. So we're—
Yeah, I want to talk about the tampon tax. Let's talk about it, because this is a really important point. So yeah, hit us up. Tell us about the tampon tax.
Absolutely. So it's basically a term that refers to the fact that tampons, panty liners, menstrual cups, all menstrual products under the sun are subject to a retail sales tax in, right now, 22 states remain. Back in 2018, it was 40 states. So like, this is a moving target, but about 22 states now. And that doesn't sound like such a big deal, or it doesn't like immediately grab your attention, unless you think about the fact that the way sales tax are supposed to work in our country is that you exempt necessities. So food, clothing, prescription drugs in Wisconsin are all exempt from sales tax, but menstrual products are not considered a necessity in this way. That gets really upsetting to think about when you think that things like medicated condoms, Viagra, which has no approved uses for women but is a prescription drug, are exempt.
I'm sorry. they're not listed as necessary or essential?
Exactly. And they are medical products. The FDA classifies them as, depending on if you're talking about tampons or pads, class one or class two medical devices. Actually, the CARES Act said that menstrual products are medical necessities because they made them so under your HSA or FSA spending plans. So we have the institutional knowledge that these are medical necessities, but for many reasons, I have a lot of theories about why it has not been changed in the tax code in this really common sense way, just to make them sales tax exempt. And that has a lot of implications.
I have to ask out loud, you guys don't have the answer, but from my being in the legislature 15 years ago, I'm like, why didn't we do anything about that? And I don't recall it coming up, which is not to say it didn't, but—
Oh, I know.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, how many women are in the legislature? This doesn't mean this is, I mean, maybe for somebody like you who's married to an OBGYN and have two daughters,
it would have been a no-brainer for me. Yeah, absolutely.
But I think most men, especially men who are making these rules, this is not a priority for them.
Well,
no shame to men.
Or that it was, again, people did not feel comfortable coming up into my office and saying, hey, Senator Kreitlow, there's this proposal, which, again, I think I would have signed on in a heartbeat, again, with the OB wife and the two daughters and everything else. But again, there was a comfort level. So for those folks who are like, why are you talking about this on the radio? This is exactly why these things have to be talked about.
That's so well said. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You have to have a bill that says that you're going to create a new tax exemption. So it can't just get done without some push. But there have been many pushes for many other lesser necessary devices. A lot of corporate interests sometimes push for their products to become tax exempt. But you need to be able to talk about menstruation, and you need to be able to talk to people who understand what menstruation is in order to get this like common sense thing added to the list.
And this is a state by state effort. So in some states like Wisconsin, these items are taxed, but in other states like New York, they're not taxed. So can you talk a little bit about the state by state efforts and what you've seen as you've been making your way across the country and making this really important change for women?
Absolutely. That's a great question. It is such an interesting like legal challenge because we have to go state by state, and it really lets you see the intricacies of different states and how they talk about women's health. But so right now we're actually having huge success in Texas. Texas currently taxes menstrual products, but we're really optimistic that this is the year that's going to change, which is like thrilling for other southern states and just like a sign of the times. As I mentioned, in 2016, since 2016, rather, there's been 18 states that have taken care of this. So whether that's by putting it in their budget, passing a bill, feeling the threat of a lawsuit and then decide having the governor decide that maybe this is actually a priority. It's really different in each place, and it tells you a lot about the way that our comfort level with this is changing. There's been a lot more news coverage, a lot more like pop culture celebrity attention to things like the pink tax or the tampon tax. Also, we like to say right now that it's one of the most civil ways that we can talk in our country about reproductive health, because it's such a polarizing topic in the moment. But needing tampons and menstrual products, thinking of them as medical necessities that shouldn't be subject to any extra tax, is pretty universally accepted. It's bipartisan, so it's a fascinating topic.
I love to hear that you're gaining traction in Texas, and it makes me think about how, as you mentioned, this is one of the softer ways to talk about reproductive health. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the in some of these harder states where women's health is being so suppressed, but more conservative legislators are looking for a way to reach out to women. And so maybe this is that time for period law to be able to make more headway in other states like Wisconsin. So what's happening in Wisconsin?
Exactly. That's exactly how we think about it, because it's really like it is lifting a financial burden off of families at the end of the day. Like households with many women and girls in them, like those are the people who would be feeling this savings the most. So doesn't have to be a polarizing topic at all. In Wisconsin, the 2023 budget proposal as of right now includes repealing the tax on tampons, which is huge. And
that proposal is from Governor Evers. So that he has proposed it, he's got it in there. Now right it becomes now, a matter of does the Republican-led legislature leave it in or take it out?
Exactly. Well said. So I just want to encourage anyone listening to like reach out to their local representatives and just like voice their support that this stay in there. We're on the right track in Wisconsin, and this could be the year, but we just like want people to keep talking about this in their communities and saying like, this is important to us. Maybe I didn't know about it last year, but you can't really look away once you've kind of been turned on to how fundamentally unfair this is. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead,
Kristen. Pat and I both just opened our mouths like we both have questions that we want to ask.
You go ahead, Kristen.
So I'm not exactly sure how to ask this question. Explain to our listeners, how do you approach your legislators and talk about these sensitive issues? Because as we talked about earlier, this is hard. This is uncomfortable. So how would you recommend someone who's not as savvy about talking about reproductive health issues reach out to their legislators with that message in order to be effective?
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, here, the message that we say when we talk to people is like a common sense message that I think like a lot of people can relate to. If you think about it, like people who menstruate on average use around 12,000 tampons or pads in a lifetime, really like broad figure, everyone's different. But so the sales tax revenue being made from those menstrual products, that means it's a lifetime economic burden that only falls on women, disproportionately falls on low-income women. I mean, maybe people are thinking of times in their lives where they were like reluctant to go to work or go to school because they didn't have the products that they needed. This is a really ubiquitous problem. Obviously, this disproportionately impacts low-income people who are just like counting dollars and cents overall. So if you're thinking about someone you know or yourself and a time when you needed menstrual products but didn't have fast access to them, like that's the personal message that talking to your legislator about would be really brave, and it's not that easy, but it really goes a long way, especially if they haven't had that conversation before.
And share then, your story. I hear you saying share your own story.
Exactly right. Share your story.
Well, and that's where, just because we mentioned it at the beginning, I'll come back to the pink tax as well, which again, in your case, might be more anecdotal since you work mostly on the period tax side of things, but is the pink tax, is it still a real thing? Are you looking when you're at Target or whatever, you're comparing products, is it getting any better, or are women still getting taken advantage of by marketing of products directly to them?
Yeah, that's why I appreciated your differentiation at the top, because the pink tax is like kind of a term used to talk about like a bigger ideal of gender inequality, economic inequality, which like we all know a lot about. It plays into like the wage gap. If you're thinking that people are getting cents on the dollar for their work, and then they're spending more of it at the store because their razor is marked up, like all of this builds on each other. And that's what I think of as the pink tax. It's kind of this way to talk about an overarching problem. And then we have, and it is confusing, but then we have things like the tampon tax, which actually refers to like literal taxes as we know it in our daily life.
All of these little things that people should know as consumers, but also as policymakers to, mm-hmm. to help them treat their folks a little better. Suzanne Herman from Period Law, thank you very much. We appreciate learning so much about this today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate
and
it.
Dr. Lyerly, I say it every week, but good work out of you. You know,
yeah. I mean, the work, being able to amplify the work that Suzanne is doing is so profoundly important. So thank you, Suzanne.
And we do appreciate it. Luke Mathers has our Civic Media Homeroom coming up next. You're up north.
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot. Don't worry about tomorrow.
A reminder that tomorrow morning on the program at 7:15, we will be talking to former Congressman Dick Gephardt, former presidential candidate, longtime Democratic leader in the House of Representatives in the late 80s throughout the 90s. And he's now on a speaking tour that includes Wisconsin stops about building bipartisan support for democracy. Something I can't believe I'm actually saying out loud, but what we need in this country right now.
It's true. They just did a session at UWGB with Professor Aaron Weinshank, and Reed Ribble was there, former Republican Congressman Reed Ribble. It was mm-hmm. a wonderful session.
It was. And we're mm-hmm. going to look forward to hearing all about that from the congressman. And again, that will be tomorrow. Also tomorrow, our usual stable of guests, including Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil, Mark Jacob, a former editor with the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. We'll talk about how the national media has covered events of this week. And UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher will talk about the weekend that is coming up in sports. But right now, we'll talk about the weekend that's coming up in civic media land when we are hopefully joined by one Luke Mathers, whose connections have often been tenuous at best. But let's see if the tin can and string are working today. Mr. Mathers, good morning. Oh, where's the Price is Right horns?
Aaron just needs like a big red button that says.
See, here's the thing. We can see that Luke has tried to connect, but we don't. It's still all shaded. And hang on, we'll try here. How about this, Mr. Mathers? Are you there?
He says, bring me on stage.
Yeah, you have to bring me out from backstage, apparently. But
Oh, did I forget to do that? Oh!
I'm getting Price is Right horned over here, and it wasn't even my own fault.
Wait. Oh, it was
that
this?
Was for Pat.
I was like, what does this button do? Oh, wait, it lets Mathers come into the studio. All right, I suppose.
Well, this laptop doesn't like me, so no camera apparently today. The camera connection, even though I used it just fine yesterday and the day before, no visual component.
Boy, the trombones are getting quite a workout today. Now one for Luke's camera.
Luke, I feel so bad because it was your birthday last week and we were making fun of you because you didn't join us, but it was because you didn't
join late
but also
because nobody sent me the invitation. My
oh,
invitation
is that me? Did I forget to send
mail?
It? Wait a minute. But you're here now and you're a year older now, and that's what counts. Was it a good birthday?
It was. It was a quiet birthday. We had that kind of snow/ice storm last week, Wednesday. So just try to play it safe. Didn't go too far. Went to the nitty gritty. Had my birthday.
Did you? You have to go.
Yeah.
For folks not familiar with Madison, the Nitty Gritty is a campus bar that is the place to go. It's their official birthday bar. They make a big deal. They sing. They give you a balloon. And of course, yes, I did it for like my, what was it, my 53rd birthday. I think I went one year because you have to. That's, you know, it's tradition. I was in Madison that day. So why not? So good for you.
Yeah, and they actually have a Sun Prairie location, so I didn't even I didn't have to go downtown. I have a location right here, not too far from home, and it was very quiet. I was only the fourth name on the board at like 6 p.m., so there were very few birthdays celebrated on that.
But it does remind me that a year ago, I was down there and told my friend Kevin, who lives in Madison, I said, let's meet at the Nitty. It was his birthday. And I knew that he didn't know what the Nitty Gritty was. So I knew he was going to be nice and surprised at the singing and the balloons and everything. And yet I sat there and waited. And finally I get a text from him saying, I'm at the Nitty Gritty in Sun Prairie. Where are you? I'm like, I didn't know there was a second location in Sunny Pea.
There's one in Middleton well. So too. They've got three different locations. God. You have to be specific when it comes to which Nitty Gritty you're trying to
celebrate. At that point, I might have just said, hey, meet me at Starbucks.
Actually drove down to the Nitty Gritty during COVID. My son turned 21 on April 29th when COVID first started, and the Gritty was doing takeout. So we drove from Green Bay to Madison to get his mug and a balloon just to try to make it special because nothing else was open.
Oh, COVID birthday parties. They were, let's never do that again. Hey, let's look ahead to Civic Media. First off, you and Brian and others are working on that wonderful new studio that's going to go up near Capitol Square. How's that coming along?
It is coming along nicely. There's more furniture being delivered. Carpet is being redone. It is coming together very nicely. So we're very excited for that. There are new equipment in the back that is humming along, and I ask if it's supposed to sound like that, and they're like, yep, that's how it's supposed to sound. I'm like, okay, perfect.
It's coming out this end fine. And by the way, I saw a social media post from a mutual friend of mine and Kristen's who checked out the new Green Bay studios, which are coming along quite nicely as well. They are going to be beautiful.
Yeah, and Oshkosh is getting their studios all worked on. We've got some of the members of the team up there working in Oshkosh. Wausau, Chad Holmes is sharing out the new photos for the Wausau studios. Mm-hmm. It's all coming together very
nicely. This is very interesting because I've asked Crudy about, you know, the eventual plan to move into Chippewa Falls and, you know, what we're going to get here. And Crudy's answer was something along the lines of a room in the back of a barber shop and a card table. So I don't think I'm going to get the same level of respect out here.
Love that, though, I think.
I don't mind it, really. Seriously, I don't. Let's see. We've got a weekend of programming, which, of course, includes the Cripes cast. Is that are you going to tell us about that, or is Mr. Zommers about to chime in?
I believe Mr. Zommers took care of preparing it for this weekend again. So, Aaron?
Yeah, this weekend, the Cripes cast is an interview with several people. It's instead of just one, it is about Joey's Song, the charity organization that has famous artists perform music as a benefit for childhood epilepsy. And they have people who organized it. They have artists who performed there, all kinds of stuff. And you can hear a lot about why they support Joey's Song, how it came to be, how they go about preparing for a live set, all kinds of fun stuff. It's a nice variety hour.
Very nice. That'll be good. What else you got to tell us? What else is new in Civic Media world?
Real quick, the Cripes cast will broadcast Saturday and Sunday at noon across the network. So you can tune in to your local Civic Media radio station. Following the Cripes cast is Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram from 1 to 2. And we get a terrific hours of best of shows. So best of Up North News, As Goes Wisconsin, and the other excellent programming put out by Civic Media. And then at 6 p.m., you can unplug from the politics and listen to Max Inc. across the network as well.
Such fun.
Yeah, it's a very, very fun time right now. We've got a lot of excellent weekend programming. We got terrific weekday programming. It's all coming together nicely, Pat.
It is. All right. Well, we really appreciate this update. We should do this more often on Thursdays. Do you think you could join us on a consistent basis?
Hey, this is 2 for 2 in my book. I'm going to count the fact that the call-in worked. I just didn't receive the invite, so.
Take the win. Just take the win. All right. We appreciate it. Thank you, Luke. Have a great day.
You as well.
All right. That's going to do it for us here. You can follow me all day long on Facebook at Pat Kreitlow Up North, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Coming up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Oshkosh, and Green Bay, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Albaugh in Richland Center, Wausau, and Amory along the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day. See you Friday.